You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life, drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Thanks again for listening. You know, here on Law of Attraction Radio Network, you are everything to us. We are so grateful for you tuning in every single week and sharing your energy with us. We receive emails from people all over the world, from the Ukraine, from Ireland, from Sweden, from Norway, from Australia, from Africa. Oh gosh, it's just so amazing. We're all part of this global family, and it's so important for us to realize how connected we are, especially in regards to the law of attraction. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you tonight about our great show. We have some really powerful information flowing your way with author Deborah Diamond, who wrote the book Life After Near Death. So we're going to explore a deeper meaning of the near-death experience and its after effects of those who experience it, as well as those who experience an instant spiritual transformation. And it's amazing how it's all connected. You're going to learn some things that I've never heard before. So I think you're really going to appreciate everything that Deborah is sharing with us. But before we do that, let's jump into talking about the law of attraction again on a global family scale. Because never in the history of the planet has so many people, actually the majority of people, so unhappy with this global situation that is occurring. Every country is feeling the strife, the fear, the lack. And I feel it's so important for us to expand the law of attraction teachings into a more global understanding of the metaphysics involved. I think this is really important for us to take the next step beyond our own personal responsibility. Now, we all know that the law of attraction is the knowledge on how to consciously create reality. The subconscious mind likes consistency, not changes. This is the main principle used to develop mass psychology. You know, the father of modern psychology, Sigmund Freud, was right at the time when he said, the seat of power is in the subconscious mind. But as humanity has gained more self-awareness, that seat of power has shifted from the subconscious mind to the conscious mind. The power of the conscious mind is in making choices and decisions continuously in the present to accomplish and achieve goals, visions, dreams of the future. So there has been a major shift in the paradigm that creates reality. The old paradigm is that the past creates the present, pushing us towards the future. And the new paradigm is that the future creates the present, which is the backdrop of the past. Law of attraction is about these conscious statements that ring true to us right now. I create my own reality, and I am responsible for what I am. I am the master of my destiny, and I am not a victim of fate. These statements are all about personal responsibility. If we expand this from the individual level to community, national, and then the global level, we can say then that we, meaning humanity at large, creates our own reality, and we are responsible for what we are, meaning the state of global illness. We are the masters of our destiny, which creates global healing, and we're not a victim of fate, which means we're not a victim of global suicide. So every human being has been given the raw materials of beliefs and attitudes, thoughts and feelings and choices and decisions. And each person has also been given the tools of desire, imagination, and expectation for consciously creating reality. So the law of attraction is all about thinking outside of the box, which leads to the pathway of spirituality. A law of attraction practitioner has to have the courage to encounter the unknown. And while encountering the unknown, we have to think differently and not allow ourselves to be conformed or conventionalized. That brings us back into being naive, unaware, being led. We have to be innovative, imaginative, inventive, and learn to draw from our dreams and visions in order to truly think outside of the box. Here's the bottom line. All of our fears are about the unknown. Fear without knowing the future outcome. So we have the choice. It's exciting to see that we're thinking outside of the box today. We are now letting the future dictate to us what our present should be. We are seeing that we're at the crossroads, and things that are happening right now are extremely exciting. We are not accepting the status quo. And now I'm asking you to create a future which encompasses a global family. It's time to create a world where the anger can subside and where we can all integrate into this connective force. It's time to get away from our egocentric personality of desiring fame and fortune, which really has to do with our own self-esteem issues. And it's time that we go beyond that to give every human being the dignity to make choices for themselves. We have to move away from what we were taught to be the norm into creating a brilliant new future. But we can't do that individually. We have to do that collectively. And now is the time. Now is the time to expand the law of attraction beyond our individual desires and needs to encompass the global family. In future broadcasts, we're going to be talking about how we can create this brilliant, abundant, prosperous new world for all of us that is free of the dominance of the military and governments and greed. And we're going to be talking about that. But for right now, let's just listen to these messages and we'll be right back with our wonderful guest, Deborah Diamond.
Hi there. Jules here, and I've got an important question for you and your family. How do you know that your food is giving you the proper nutrients that help you to thrive mentally, emotionally, and especially physically? Truthfully, you don't know that you're getting great nutrients from your grocery store, nor do you know the kinds of pesticides used by producers. That's why people are turning to growing their own nutrients for their family. Even if you just have a bucket of soil, you can increase your vitamin and mineral intake dramatically, thereby increasing your family's health and vitality. This is a product I stand by because I personally use it to produce the best tasting and wholesome fruits and vegetables. I also use it for my lawn and house plants. It turns everything into a power plant. It's called Algae Plus, and you simply use it when you water your plants and shrubs, creating a beautiful, wholesome garden to feed the plants in your life. The more vital your plants and trees are, and especially food gardens are, the healthier you and your loved ones become. It's a fact that cannot be denied. So I want you to visit algaeplus.us. That's A-L-G-A-E plus P-L-U-S.us. And tell them that Jules sent you. Now let's talk with Deborah Diamond, who wrote the really great book called Life After Near Death. You're really going to find out some things that we haven't heard before, and I'm really excited to introduce you to Deborah. Now, she was a former Wall Street money manager, a CNBC commentator, and even had a radio show on CNN. And she left a very high-profile job to pursue a life of spirituality and purpose. She's worked in the metaphysical field for the last 8 years, and she is a psychic, and she has graduated from Holistic Studies of the Institute of New York, along with Arthur Findlay College in the UK, and all of these other wonderful, wonderful things. She lives in Baltimore and in New Mexico, so I know that you're going to really enjoy the show tonight. Welcome, Deborah, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Jules. It's an absolute pleasure and delight to be here with you today and to be able to talk about near-death experience after effects, which is an area that's not very well understood and even less well understood the near-death experiences themselves.
Exactly, exactly. I also wanted to point out to my listeners that Jeffrey Long, who has been on my show quite a few times talking about the near-death experience and his vast library of people from all over the world who has similar experiences, but this is actually a different in that you go into the actual experience after they return. And that's why I think this is so, so huge. So let's start off talking about what happened. You were a high-powered Wall Street manager and a CNBC commentator and a former host of CNN radio program. And you walked away from it all to concentrate on your spiritual pursuits. So what compelled you to do what some might call a drastic career move?
Well, you're right. I think viewed from the outside, it would certainly seem to be, a 180 degree turn. I had what is known as a spiritually transformative experience. It wasn't something that I was looking for or seeking or in any way, wanted for myself. I was a high-profile money manager. I was a CNBC regular commentator, and I was in the investment business for a very long time, about 25 years, and that was the world that I knew. When I was in the investment business, I always felt like I knew things. I would know things about companies and industries and management teams before I even met them. Somebody would come in and drop a prospectus or an annual report on my desk, and before I even opened it up, I would know about that company and the industry. And I didn't know how I knew things, I just knew them. And in the investment business, nobody talks about being psychic. The closest they get is they say, what does your gut tell you?
Uh-huh.
And my boss used to say to me, Deborah, you have good instincts. And I think, yeah, I guess I have good instincts. That was the only way I could contextualize it. Mm-hmm. So in 2008, I decided to take an intuition development course in New York because I figured, after all, I have good intuition and it would be fun to learn a few tips to tune it up. So it was a weekend class, and I went with about 25 people in the class, none of whom I knew. And on Saturday morning, we did a few exercises, and I was getting everything. And I didn't understand how it was possible or how I was getting all these things, but I was. And it was fun. You know, the teacher kept it light. And then we took a break. And when we came back from the break, the teacher said, "Now we're going to do a seance." And I thought, no, you know, I was coming for intuition development, you know, not for a seance. But I thought, well, you know, it's Saturday morning. The class runs through Sunday, you know, all through Sunday. And I thought nothing's going to happen anyway. So, you know, I'll just do it. And then we'll go on to the next exercise. So the teacher said, "I'll put you in a meditative state and then I'll take you out of it. And if anyone sees anything, you know, just let me know and I'll tell you what to do." And I thought, well, that's fine. That's not pertinent to me because I'm not going to see anything. So we meditated. The teacher took us out of that state. And then she said, "Does anyone see anything?" And I looked around the room and everyone was looking at each other. And I raised my hand and the teacher said, "Yes, Deborah, what do you see?" And I said, "I see about 50 people." I was seeing people who had passed over, who were related to people in this class, none of whom I knew. I was seeing some of my family members who had passed, and I was seeing random people who weren't associated with anyone. So the teacher said, well, if you see someone, for instance, in the corner of the room, they're more than likely to go with someone who sits who's in that corner. So I said, "Well, I do see someone in the corner," and I described him. He was Hispanic with dark hair parted in the middle, a handlebar mustache, and a big white smile, big broad smile. And when I described him, the woman sitting in that corner began to sob. And she said, "I can identify him. That's my fiancé who died 2 years ago." And so the woman sitting in the corner said to me, "You know, during the break, if I show you on my cell phone some pictures, would you be able to identify him?" And I said, "Sure," because he was plain as day to me, and I felt confident that I could identify him. So during the break, you know, she showed me her cell phone, and she flipped through the pictures, and I said, "There, that's him." And she said, "Yes, that's my fiancé. He died 2 years ago." And she was so grateful because she did believe in all of this, and she thought she would hear from him, and she hadn't heard from him. So she was very grateful to me for making this connection, and she hugged me, and she thanked me. Now, I worked on Wall Street. You don't get any thank yous on Wall Street, and there aren't a lot of hugs either. So, you know, it was not lost on me that I had done something profound for somebody, something meaningful. And that had a huge impact. I mean, I was still frightened and I was bewildered and I didn't have a context for any of this, but it did register that I had done something important for someone. So that was what kicked off my transformation. I spent the rest of the weekend in that class and more things happened, you know, the rest of the weekend. And then Sunday night, when the class was over, I drove back to Baltimore, which is where I'm from. And I called my youngest son, who scores very high in logic tests. And I told him what happened. And I told him what happened. And he didn't say a word. And then when I was all done, he said, "Well, that makes sense. We're just energy, and the energy has to go somewhere." Mm-hmm. So that gave me a context that for understanding what happened. I mean, I was still overwhelmed, but it helped. Mm-hmm. I came back to Baltimore. I didn't tell anybody what happened. You have to understand, most of the people I knew worked on Wall Street, and they, you know, would have laughed at me or just thought I was crazy. So I didn't mention it. And later in the year, I decided to go out to Taos, New Mexico, where I had been 7 or 8 times in the past. And I'm also an artist and a painter. And I thought I would go out there that summer to paint for a while. I rented a place for 2 months and I went out there to paint. That's what I thought. I thought I went out there to paint. But what actually happened was, once I was out there, I began to unpack this whole experience. And in Taos, Taos is a very unusual place because there are a lot of spiritual people, artists, writers, musicians, and psychics. And when people in Taos say, "What do you do?" and you say, "I'm a psychic," they say, "Me too." Mm-hmm. So, it's not unusual to do this. And while I was out there, I just relaxed about what had happened to me. And without even knowing it, I just began to do the work. And I took, I trained to use my abilities and talents, and I started to run some workshops and do readings and this sort of thing. Eventually, I came back to the East Coast thinking, well, that's the end of that because I'm coming back to Baltimore, and Baltimore is not like Taos. You know, people aren't going to be interested in this stuff here. But I found out that that wasn't the case. And when I came back, I had people who would come to me and ask for readings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's what led to this transformation from a hard-nosed businesswoman, a Wall Street professional to, I'm a psychic and a medium now, and I'm doing something that, to help people.
Right.
And it's very satisfying. At the beginning, I was kind of dragged, kicking, and screaming into it, and I find that that's not unusual for most people who have these sorts of experiences. And by the way, these experiences are not uncommon. I think they're much more common than we realize. It's just that people don't talk about them.
Right.
And this was not something that I, as I said, I envisioned for myself. When I was growing up, I'm pretty sure that my parents would not have been thinking in terms of me becoming a psychic. It was something that it took a while to get used to. But I have always been left and right brain, so maybe that was helpful. I've always been an artist, and I've been a writer and whatnot. So I have that kind of going for me. And in fact, when I worked on Wall Street, what was called my strong instincts, turned out to be something more than that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, so let's move on then and talk about the difference in this book, that everyone that had near-death experiences did not have the same experience when they returned. Or even while they were doing it, some of the people that you cite in your book never did see the tunnel or the white light. So explain the difference on what we're seeing in this age.
Okay, so that's really two questions. So let me take the second one first about why some people did not go through a tunnel or see a white light. And by the way, that's a very interesting and important question, because what I found in interviewing these experiencers is that many of them feel inadequate about their experience, about their NDEs, because the media has made such a big deal about the elements of the NDE. That's how the NDE has been defined in our culture. Have you seen the white light? Did you go through a tunnel? And so many people I talked to said to me, I'm not sure that my experience was valid because I didn't see a light. For some people, they have very profound experiences with one or two elements, and some have less intense experiences, but experience a number of the elements. It's not how many elements you experience. It's whether you come back transformed. Because, in fact, there are many people, veterans, for instance, who have had some sort of near-death experience, but don't remember anything about it, but they come back and they know they've changed and they know they can't go back to the way they are. This is not just veterans. There are many people like this. And there's something about the impact of having your consciousness leave your physical body that kicks off this experience. And, as I said, some people remember having had experienced, a number of the elements, and others do not. People who have such a profound and beautiful experience during their NDE that they want to go back there.
Mm.
So, and they're not afraid. They're not afraid. But I think everyone in the book who had a near-death experience, they all said the same thing. I'm not afraid of death anymore. I mean, it's pretty common. But, you know, again, the media has publicized the elements so much that everybody thinks, oh, you know, I didn't go through the tunnel, or I didn't see a light, so I didn't have one of those. And it's really, you know, I think it's time to move beyond that.
Good. Well, Lynn, let's do that. Let's move beyond that and tell some of the stories that you have in your book. They're really phenomenal and so fascinating. So let's talk about, you had a person named Barbara who experienced that she met her grandmother, and there was really some profound insight as to the reason behind meeting her grandmother. And I thought this was so important for the audience to grasp. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. So Barbara Whitfield had an NDE when she was, I believe, in her early 30s. She was suspended in a Stryker bed after back surgery, and found that she had an out-of-body experience. She left her body, was in the hallway of the hospital, overheard a conversation at the nursing station. This was while her physical body was in her hospital room, but her consciousness had left her body, and she was able to overhear this conversation at the nurse's station. And she also had a life review with her grandmother. Her grandmother was probably the most important person in her life, the person most likely to influence her, the person that she respected the most. And she had she experienced her life review with her grandmother. And she said to me, why would I have had my life review with my grandmother? And my grandmother's been gone for, I don't remember how many years it had been, but it had been quite a while. And, you know, what became apparent as I began to do this work was that people had their life reviews, if they had one, with the person who was that they respected the most, who was the most likely to influence them, and who had the most profound effect on them. And when you think about it, it makes sense, because a life review is supposed to be a teaching, you know, is a teaching experience. And you're going to have the teaching experience by somebody that you most respect. So in some cases, people didn't have life reviews. And why was that? Well, you know, when we got into the conversation and asked some of these individuals, you know, who was there in your life that you really respected? Well, the answer was nobody. You know, some of them didn't have tight connections with their family members or anyone else. So everyone gets what they need to get in this experience. It's very much customized. And the bottom line is that they get what they need to get to come back and be transformed. So that may include a life review with somebody who was influential. It may not. But if they do have a life review, it tends to be with the person who was most meaningful to them in their life, someone that they would really listen to.
Let's get back to what people who have near-death experiences deal with when they come back into their consciousness or their bodies. There was a person named Marissa who you had a chapter on, who talked about dealing with time on earth. It completely changed for her, and it took her a while to come to grips with it. Explain that.
You know, when people come back from near-death experiences, there's no way to understand this from our context, but they come back sort of top-heavy with consciousness. You know, most of us walk around on Earth with a certain proportion of physicality and a certain amount of consciousness. Some people walk around with very little consciousness, but most people walk around with a certain amount of consciousness, and it's vastly outweighed by our physicality. When NDEers come back from their experience, their consciousness has expanded. So now they're kind of top-heavy with consciousness. Mm-hmm. And dealing in a rational, kind of linear world is something that's extremely difficult for them, because part of them is out in the universe now. So they're trying to, you know, they have to walk with one foot on Earth and one foot in the universe. And it's very difficult. I found that most of these experiencers did have issues with time. It's just difficult for them to ground themselves in our, you know, in sort of our fact-based way of life. And Marissa was one of them. I learned very quickly working with these people that, you know, I had to be patient because they would forget about appointments. They just didn't have any concept of time, many of them. But I think that's because part of them was out in the universe.
Wow, that really rings a bell with me because I know of one particular energy healer who is so delightful, but he is so lost when it comes to time. You ask him to be somewhere and he just doesn't have a concept. It's really amazing. I mean, try to have an interview with him and it will be like 4 or 5 hours after the appointed time because he couldn't grasp functioning with a clock or a watch. It didn't make sense to him. And he did have a near-death experience. So that kind of explains what was going on that I didn't realize. So is that temporary or is that permanent?
Well, they say that in general, it takes 7 years to acclimate to having an NDE. It takes about 7 years. So it's a long period of time. I found that a number of the people did what you're explaining. They didn't go out and spend time with homeless people, but many of them had these extraordinary experiences at night, you know, when they would go to sleep, visitations from beings that, you know, they couldn't explain. They were sometimes taken to places that they, you know, were unfamiliar. You know, again, once your consciousness has been opened, it's like their back door was open. They can't close it. So it's a hard concept to explain to someone who's never had something like this, but you know, many people say to me, how can I have one of those? That sounds so great, you know, and I think, maybe I didn't do a very good job of explaining this because they don't understand we still have to live on Earth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not an easy thing or an easy adjustment, you know, once you've left part of yourself out in the universe.
Now, see, that's what I want to get more clarity on, because you're saying, now, not everyone leaves part of themselves out to in the universe. Is that correct? Or is it? Because you do state in your book, you walk with one foot on the other realm and one foot in this realm. So what is this, the norm or what?
It's the norm, you know, they
really?
All leave it. Yeah, they all, if you have an NDE or even in some cases an STE, a spiritually transformative experience, your consciousness is flung from your physical body and it communes with the universe. And, you know, as I said, it's like your back door being blown open. And when you come back, your back door is permanently open. Your consciousness is permanently open. You're a part of the universe now. They're all like this. They're all like this. But, you know, the thing is, you have to understand, we know very little still about NDEs. I do know this. We know very little about NDEs. We know very little about STEs. There are some people who've tried to categorize this stuff. Mm-hmm. There are some who studied it. I'm not sure you could put everything into buckets. There are scientists who study – the scientists who study this are statistically oriented, and that's the way they deal with things. Mm-hmm. But you're dealing with the metaphysical world, and it's not linear, mm-hmm. and there's a lot we don't know.
Interesting. And that still brings up a question with Dr. Jeffrey Long, who had, you know, at the time that I interviewed him, 3,000 people who experienced the same thing. Well, maybe he was just analyzing those who had the same experience.
I think, you know, one of the critiques from the scientific community is that NDEs aren't real, that they're
right.
You know, delusions or hypoxia of the brain. You know, if that's true, everyone's having the same delusion. You know, you can read all the cases and everyone, there are aspects and there's commonality, you know, across all the cases. So I think science can't deny that there is something real going on here. But scientists, you know, have looked at this phenomenon by categorizing the experience according to the elements. Mm-hmm. That's how they do it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're looking at the statistics.
Right.
But there's, you know, we can go beyond the statistics. I think they look at it from a statistical point of view because they have no other way of looking at it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I'm a psychic and a medium, so I can have readings with these people and you know, we went immediately much deeper into all their situations than, you know, science is capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And even then, you know, there's still so much that wasn't revealed to me that is beyond what I can translate or understand. You know, I'm only shown as much as I can handle, too. So, you know, I was able to, you know, bring forth this information that I was shown, but there's still, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Hmm. So we've got a lot more to learn about.
Absolutely.
It. That is, and what I'm gathering from you is, no, we don't have to have a near-death experience. We don't have to have that leaving the body experience. We can have a spiritual experience without having a near-death experience.
Well, there are, you know, there is this category of spiritually transformative experiences, or STEs, and NDEs are a subset of STEs. Near-death experiences are considered right now a subset of spiritually transformative experiences. But again, all these categories have been, you know, made up by scientists. So, it, you know, they may change. 10 or 20 years from now, this may all look very different.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who, you know, while they're sitting on their couch, not doing anything extraordinary, you know, have an extraordinary experience. And it doesn't involve a heart attack or drowning or, you know, any kind of trauma. But they come back and they're changed. All of this needs to be researched. I mean, this is fodder for another book.
Right.
Because, you know, I talked to so many people who had experiences that were not within the confines of all the elements, but they had been transformed and they were, you know, identical to all the people who had the classical NDE.
It's so fascinating because science is now coming out and saying, well, wait a minute, Timothy O'Leary had something going on there that was real. Just by LSD is allowing the body or the mind to go into the other realm. So they're finding that, wait a minute, something is going on that can't be just, you know, something that we can say no to. There are other instances. So it's like we are totally awakening to this fact of not only how to deal with our 3D world, but how to actually get into that or step into that other realm.
Right. I think the important thing to remember and the takeaway that I would hope people would have from this book is that people who have near-death experiences return with their energy altered.
Mm.
We are made up of energy. Remember I said that at the beginning. Mm. And that energy is forever. Those who return from NDEs return with their energy altered and they're completely transformed. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, very important to understand. You know, NDEs have been looked at from the perspective of the elements, but let's look at, you know, what this is really about. And it seems as if when they have this experience, their consciousness is somehow enhanced and altered, and they receive, you know, an extra boost of energy, or they're refueled by the universe. I mean, we don't know exactly. There were other themes that came up also that kept cropping up in the, you know, in the book. One that I thought was so interesting was about mission. Everyone that I interviewed asked me what their mission was when they returned, and they used that word mission. They didn't say, what's my career or what's my life path? They all were very concerned about what their mission was. Mm. And that was very interesting because it seemed pretty clear that they all came back with an assignment. And they seemed to be sent back from their NDEs to act as pillars of light, to light our Earth. Some of them have abilities and talents that they're able to translate to act as a source of light to us, and others do not. Not everything that happens to them out in the universe is easily translatable to life on Earth. Mm-hmm. But mission was consistent across all these experiencers. They all had the same question. They all use the same terminology. So, you know, it makes you wonder, what does the universe know about our Earth? And why are all these people having this experience?
Because you had mentioned before the interview started, actually, is that in the last 15 months, there has been more and more books about this subject, which means that it's becoming very relevant for us to understand at this period of time. Why do you think that is?
Well,
what's going on in the world that we are tuning into this right now?
Well, Evan Alexander wrote his book Proof of Heaven, and he was, you know, a Harvard neurosurgeon, so he was branded and had credibility because of, you know, being formerly affiliated with Harvard. And that opened the door for a lot of people who were on the fence about talking about this, you know, and I think a lot of people felt like, well, you know, if he could talk about it, I could talk about it too. Mm-hmm. So there have always been a lot of people who've had this experience. According to a study in the 90s, 15 million people in the U.S. alone have admitted to having an NDE, which means to me that there are probably even more than that, mm-hmm. because there are many who don't know what happened to them, and many of them don't know what the term NDE really means. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's just not in the U.S. It's all over the world people have this experience. So I think there have always been lots of people who have these transcendent experiences, but we're only starting to hear about it now. And that could be also because there seems to be a shift taking place. Mm-hmm. You may see that with the people that you talk to. I know I see it when I read for people. I see more and more people coming to me and saying, you know, something funny happened to me and I don't understand what it is. And it seems to be happening more and more. So I think there's a confluence of events, but certainly the path has been cleared for more people to come forward.
Right. I have noticed that just in the last few years. Mm-hmm. The shift is actually definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, occurring in that more people are awakening to life beyond our 3D world.
Yes. Well, it is permanent. They're forever changed. They can never go back. It's not something they can put the pieces back together again and go back to their old life. They can't. Are there people who can't get it together? Yes, there are many of them. I talk to lots of people who are always on the move, thinking that if they move here, take a new job, a new spouse, you know, try something else, that that's going to fix things. And it doesn't. You know, it's sad. But it doesn't. They're searching. You know, once you've been out in the universe, which is what's happened to these people, and been shown things and experienced things, you know, life on Earth just isn't the same anymore. And they have, and it's continuous, and they have, you know, issues adapting. Mm-hmm. Some of the more successful ones are able to kind of walk the walk on Earth and still be open to the experience that they had. But many of them, many, many of them are not able to do this.
Right, right. And, you know, it again reminds me of my friend who is not able to deal with time. Mm-hmm. And it's like he's not able to literally function. And he makes a lot of people mad. They just give up on him. So
I could understand.
Yeah,
that.
So it's like, okay, so of what are they really gaining? from that then if they can't participate in this life?
That's a good question. What are they gaining? Well, they have an opportunity to experience life on Earth from a completely different perspective, from a much broader perspective of higher consciousness, which most people don't have that opportunity. And if you know how to handle that, it's a tremendous gift. Unfortunately, most people don't know how to handle it. So, you know, for those who can, you know, many of them are able to take this gift and work with it. For instance, there are people, there's a individual in the book who's a well-known musician who had an NDE, I think, 35 or 40 years ago. And he had no experience in music, but the day after his NDE, he sold everything that he owned, and he went out and bought, she went out and bought all this equipment to start to compose and play music. And she had no experience in this at all. Now it's many years later, and she has devoted her life to creating music, and her music is a way for her to touch individuals. It's new age kind of consciousness music, and it's a way for her to communicate and touch individuals and bring the light to individuals. That's a case where her transformation and her enhanced consciousness has been used very productively. But it's not always like that.
It's not always like that. So is there a way to train the people who have experienced this to live in both realms successfully? In other words, not get lost?
Well, yes, there needs to be some sort of support system. There needs to be more of a discussion, a conversation for these individuals so they can deal with their new situation. There are, as you know, there are organizations like IONS or Jeffrey Long's organization where NDEers can congregate their community chat rooms, or they have monthly meetings in person. And so these NDEers can meet other people who've had the same experience. And they find that to be very helpful because they can talk about what happened to them. And of course, who understands better than somebody who's been through the same experience? So it's sort of like a support group.
And I think that is exceptionally important to get out there. I know that I have a lot of listeners who have experienced this, and they have questions and they don't know who to go to. So that there are places, if they do their research, they can find places that will give them answers and how to adapt to both realms.
Yes, and actually in the book I do list some of these organizations along with the websites and contact information and describe what they do. And many of these organizations have chapters throughout the U.S. and even internationally. And so that will help, you know, that'll provide support for people and help them get the conversation going. And so they won't feel so isolated.
So this is really a fantastic book. I highly recommend it to anyone, because the information that we gain from this is only going to help us in our 3D world, as well as those who have been who have actually had the experience. It's really so informative, a delightful book to read, and everyone's going to get so much out of it.
Well, thank you so much, Jules. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. And I just want to mention that for those who read the book, if they would kindly like to leave a review on Amazon, that would be great. And also to like us on Facebook at Life After Near Death. And they'll be able to keep up with events and news about the NDE world there.
Okay, so do they go to Amazon to purchase the book?
Well, Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or it's in, you know, bookstores. So you can go online and purchase it, or you can go to your local bookstore and ask for it. Or you can go to my website, DeborahDiamondAuthor.com, and it could be purchased through the website.
Okay, let's give the name of the book again. It's Life After Near Death by Deborah Diamond. This is just so fascinating. And do you have another book planned? I think you mentioned something about that. I see a couple of them in your future.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a couple other ideas right now. It's a very interesting question. So because of the work I've done with this, lots of other avenues have opened up, you know, along the lines of the afterlife and consciousness. And I'll have some more books coming out, so just stay tuned.
And I noticed that you talk about energy, which we all know that everything is energy. Why are we not all able to see the other side?
I think everyone actually is able to see the other side. You know, it's just that some people are more open and get the opportunity. But the people who make the news, the scientists and whatnot, this is not their metric. They're not interested in seeing the other side. They're interested in using their tools that they've been, you know, they've gone to school for and trained with. And that's how they classify, you know, that's how they're looking at this metaphysical world or this energetic world. And as long as they continue to try to use scientific measures to measure a nonlinear world, they're not going to see it.
Right.
It's just not possible. So,
and they're trying so hard. There's been one group that interviewed people who had died and near-death experiences in 25 hospitals around the world, and they still aren't coming up based on their scientific dealings. They can't come up with a definitive thing. They are suggesting that consciousness survives after death, but they are not there yet. And it's something that you are, and could be your mission in life, to show us, well, hey, yeah, wait a minute, there is, and here's what it's all about.
Right. Well, you know, but the difference is I'm open, I'm a psychic, I'm a medium, I've seen it, I've tasted it, I've experienced it with the people that I read for in this book, the experiencers, the cases in this book. So, you know, I come at it from a different angle and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
People in the scientific world aren't necessarily going to take my word for it. You know, I'm a psychic. So, I mean, even though I have a background, you know, professional background, and I'm well educated, and I have master's degrees, and I was, you know, I was a professor at Johns Hopkins University and at George Washington University. So I have a deep background in the linear world. But the truth of the matter is, I'm a psychic and a medium. And that was the ability that I used alongside the more qualitative measures to do this work. And it just seemed to me that there was no other way to really get at this without kind of going there myself. And I have that ability to do that. So, you know, that was how I was able to reach some of these conclusions. But again, science, you know, they're doing it with their list of elements and, you know, Sam Parnia's experiment where they're putting images on the ceilings of hospital rooms so that if someone in a hospital has a near-death experience, they think that that person, when they leave, have an out-of-body experience, will come back and say, yes, I saw that image in the room in the third floor, which to me seems honestly ridiculous, because these people have a lot more important things to do if they have a out-of-body experience and leave and go out into the universe than travel around into a hospital looking at the ceilings of the different rooms. I mean, they're going about it in such a limited way. You know, now that's me talking. So
yes, it is limited, but at the same time, any information that they're bringing back could change someone's mind about the situation. So it could have been their purpose to do that. This is such great information. It's been delightful to talk with you. Any last words for the... Oh, there is one thing that I wanted to ask. Are you still giving private readings?
I do. And the best way to contact me is by going on my website, Deborah Diamond. I have two websites, actually, DeborahDiamondAuthor.com and DeborahDiamondPsychic.com. And you'll find a place there to contact me, email me. You can email me at diamond.debra@gmail.com, or you can go through my website. And I do readings. I do them in person, or I do them by Skype if it's long distance. And I read for people all over the world. So those readings take place either over Skype or by telephone or FaceTime.
Wonderful. And particularly if someone has had an issue with their own near-death experience, they should contact you, because I'm sure that you can absolutely help them to get back into living both scenarios.
Yeah, I have read for lots of people who have NDEs. I have lots of people who come to me who've had NDEs and STEs who want to explore them further, and you know, we're able to do that through readings. So yes, I'm very open to that.
Wonderful. That is good news for all of our listeners. Very, very important topic. Thank you so much, Debra, for coming on.
My pleasure, Jules. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com. And have a great week.
Hey guys, time to get in on the action for the biggest moments in basketball with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projections, place your entry, and win up to 100 times your money. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use the code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.